The opinions and views expressed in Dead Men Do Tell Tales and all affiliated media are Jordan and Nicole's and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of their training program or others working in the field of medico-legal death investigation. Hey everyone.
Welcome to Dead Men Do Tell Tales,
a podcast about forensic pathology related topics.
I'm Nicole Kroom.
And I'm Jordan Taylor.
We're both pathology residents who are going into forensic pathology.
And that weird pop sound that you might have heard or might not was the ice in my whiskey popping for some strange reason.
Oh, I thought that you had hit it on your laptop.
No, the ice did some weird popping thing as it melted. Huh. And on that note, we are drinking Jameson. The last two of my whiskey tour from Christmas last year.
R.I.P.
Good timing for coming up in another month.
Yeah.
They're both Irish whiskey cask mates, and this one is the IPA edition, and when we're done with this, we have a stout edition. Nicole tends to not like IPAs, but this is like, I can't even really taste hops, but it's pretty good.
I definitely can't taste hops. You may notice that I'm a bit stuffy.
And Cole is very awake, ready to attack. So, on that note of my adorable little cat, who has decided that I am her favorite plaything and my flesh is the best, today we're going to be talking about animal attacks. And a little bit about animal attacks in general, some things about the forensic pathology around animal attacks and autopsies around animal attacks. As long as Cole doesn't gnaw through the cord connecting the microphone to the computer.
Oh, that's kind of important.
Yeah. So, one thing I wanted to throw out at the beginning, because we're probably not going to touch on this again, I looked at just animal attacks in general.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the stats I kind of want to throw out was there are, per year, about 250,000 human bites.
Really? Humans biting other humans?
Humans biting other humans. And it's... I knew that that was a big thing because, you know, my rotations through the ED, we regularly would suture up and clean out because mouths are the most disgusting. Human mouths, especially. But 250,000 per year.
Yeah.
And it sounded like these were bites, not like somebody punches another guy in the mouth.
And
like
accidentally,
human bites.
Huh, that's crazy.
And on top of those 250,000 human bites, there are about 4.5 million dog bites a year, which I think is probably a good place to start with this. People always think of pets as these docile little things that aren't going to do anything, and they rarely think about the fact that they are wild animals. They're domesticated, but they are definitely wild animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I can promise you from the cuts that are constantly on me, Cole loves to bite me. Again, not maliciously, but you know, things happen and animals aren't clean.
Right.
So, from these dog bites, about 3 to 18% develop infections. And per year, there's about, I saw 10 to 20 fatalities. Is that about where you saw?
I saw...
Somewhere in that range?
10 to 20? Yeah, yeah. This one study I found said approximately 19.
Nice, solidly in that range. I think this was trying to give you a range over, like, several years of where it had it. But yeah, these dog bites, even... Sometimes, of course, it'll be that they hit an artery or something, but just the infections from the dog bites really can cause very severe disease. And it said that it cost about $1 billion annually in the medical system to treat these dog bites.
Oh, wow.
Which was a lot more than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I definitely saw that millions dog bites per year in statistic, and I was really amazed by that as well.
I saw that boys are bitten more than girls. It's more on the face and scalp that they tend to be bitten. And this is a fun stat. You're more likely to be killed by a domesticated dog than to die from being hit by lightning.
Oh, that is a fun fact. Just something to throw out at parties now on. Yeah.
That's really what I'm learning through this, just to be a trivia queen.
Yeah.
All the random things.
Well, when I was in London recently, we went on one of those walking tours, and the guides like to throw out fun facts, and one of the fun facts that this guy threw out was, do you know why an alcoholic drink is called a stiff drink?
No.
It's because I forget the name of the military guy, but there's this famous military guy, and he won this big battle but died during the course of the battle at sea.
Okay.
And in order to get his body back home, the men put his body inside one of the bourbon barrels to preserve it. But they forgot which one they had put it in. So they learned at the end of the voyage that they had accidentally been drinking from that barrel.
That's so disgusting.
And, you know, rigor mortis, stiff.
Stiff, so. Yeah. That's awful.
Yep. So I turned to my friend and I was like, this is a fun fact for forensic pathologists.
That is a fun fact for forensic pathologists.
Definitely have to keep that one in my repertoire.
And I feel like with dog bites, you just have a lot of stories from people that you know that got bitten by a dog.
Oh, yeah.
This weekend I was visiting a friend out in Vacaville. And I told her that we're going to do one on animal attacks. She's like, oh, did I ever tell you the story about when I was bitten by a dog?
Really?
And it was, you know, neighborhood dog. There are two different dogs that she regularly played with. Hi, Christy, if you're listening. And apparently she had picked one up and went to, like, pet the other one or pick the other one up. And, like, they weren't, like, dog friends. They were two separate dogs in the neighborhood.
Oh.
And the one dog went to attack the other dog and got her in the face. And she had a pretty good lip gash that the plastic surgeon that Fixed did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
There's a whole story of that too. But like, just because the dog was attacking the other dog and she got in the way, you know.
Yeah.
Don't try to break up a dog fight unless you're very, very comfortable and well padded.
Oh.
It's easy. And of course, these wounds, clean them, antibiotics. We'll probably talk about rabies in a bit. Make sure you get your post-exposure prophylaxis, tetanus shots. And that's with really all of these animal bites we're going to get into. It's pretty much cleaning, antibiotics, rabies and tetanus, I feel like, are kind of the mainstays, except when we get into some of the exotic stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a friend in high school. He was attacked by a dog, but it had gotten hit by a car, and he was trying to help it, and it was freaked out, and it ended up attacking him. So, yeah, lots of different situations you can end up in, and people always forget. The dogs are scared. My best friends.
They're scared.
Yeah. Yeah, in terms of death, you mentioned that little boys are more likely to get attacked, but males and children less than 10 years of age also have the highest rate of death from dog attacks. And the number of deaths and death rate from dog attacks appears to be increasing.
Okay. So interesting.
I don't know why that might be, but there's that. And since I was looking into dog attacks, I also, because a lot of people associate dog attacks with pit bulls and specific breeds.
Oh, this is it. I do like these stats because pit bulls are my favorite.
I don't have specific stats, but I was looking at the SPCA website and they actually have a position statement on pit bulls. And they talk a lot about how the pit bulls descended from the original English bull baiting dog, which I didn't know. And it was bred to bite and hold down bulls, bears, and other large animals.
Sure.
Which is crazy. But no, so they talk about the history and they say that genetics does not mean that you are going to be aggressive. It's a lot of problems with when they're younger, they don't get proper socialization, and that dog breed specific legislation has not been shown to decrease the rate of dog attacks.
Well, the other things that they've shown statistically is that the most likely dog you're going to get bitten by is a lab or a retriever. It's not pit bulls. Pit bulls are actually pretty low on the list, but labs and retrievers, who are, you know, everybody has their golden retriever and their yellow or chocolate lab at home. They assume that they're really safe, but you're much more likely to get bit by them than you are a pit bull.
Yeah, and they made that point that other breeds of dogs that aren't usually associated with aggression definitely have been known to bite. And so this whole thing with pit bulls is just a lot of bad press.
Poor puppies.
Yeah.
Poor pitties. Switching to the other favorite domestic animal, as opposed to the about 4.5 million dog bites, I saw about 400,000 cat bites. And kind of the opposite from dogs, girls are more likely to be bitten, and then female adults have the highest rate of bite.
Huh.
So that cat lady thing is apparently extends to being bitten as well. And then I think the other thing that people associate cats with, and this is probably a good point to bring up with some autopsy stuff, is they think of, like, after you die, your cat is going to eat you kind of thing. And one, any animal, if they're not getting fed, are going to find a way to get nourishment because they do. But that's something that we do need to think about in autopsy is not just pet feeding, but, like, critter bites and that type of thing where after you've died and you're not circulating blood anymore, if you have bites that don't have associated blood with them or associated changes around them, that's probably something that happened post-mortem. So with an animal attack, if a bite is associated with blood or some kind of reaction, then it's probably something that happened before you died. Versus if there isn't that reaction around it, blood, swelling, etc., then it's probably something that happened after your blood stopped going round and round.
Yeah, I had a paper that was talking about that, distinguishing post-mortem from antemortem injury. And also they mentioned because animals concentrate on body orifices or around defects. Mm-hmm. So if somebody dies and they have wounds, they can, then that's like one of the first places that animals will go to. And chomp on. So it can cause a lot of wound remodeling, which can make that sort of difficult as well.
Yeah.
And also because, you know, orifices, sometimes animals post-mortem can cause trauma to different regions that can raise suspicion of sexual assault. So that's another thing that comes up. You had mentioned that we look for like a tissue site reaction. There's actually a name for that called the popiel phenomenon.
Popiel?
It's named after a legendary Polish king who was devoured alive by rats.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Bad death.
This is individuals who are unconscious for some time before death may have a vital tissue reaction at the site of animal bites.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's an additional layer of complexity. If somebody is like mostly dead, but some rat comes along to chomp on them, and then
my first thought with that is like in The Mummy when they put him in the coffin with the scarab
beetles,
and just like screaming, like that's all that I'm.
Oh my gosh, that movie freaked me out the first time I saw it.
Same, I literally like wanted to leave the theater but couldn't leave the theater because I knew that if I left the theater, I would have all of the like nightmares.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah. Anyway, moving on from that.
Yes, that's the last thing I wanted to say.
So next most common bite that I saw. Again, attacks, not necessarily deaths, was from snakes. In the U.S., about 45,000 a year. Worldwide, about 5 million. There are about 2.4 million envenomations a year. And that is a snake that has venom that bites you. And around the world, there's about 100,000 deaths annually from snake bites.
100,000?
Yeah. And it said about 400,000 amputations / other consequences, which include infection, scarring, contracture, and psychological sequelae, which, I might have one or two of those.
I agree.
But there is some, in terms of other treatment that we talked about before, anti-venom is a big thing with snakes. A lot of zoos that are handling these have anti-venom on site. So it's called COFAB, or one of the more common ones is called COFAB. And usually when you go to the ED, they'll call up poison control and they have a good idea of exactly how much you need to give or what kind of bite and how long you wait for to see the change and that kind of thing. So it's really, really pinned down about how many units you're going to need and that kind of thing. And if often they won't necessarily have enough in a hospital, but they can fly them in from elsewhere to get more anti-venom. So
yeah, a couple months ago at Toxicology Grand Rounds, they actually gave a case presentation about a snake bite.
Mm-hmm.
And they were focusing on the coagulopathy that can happen post-snake bite, which is when your blood cannot clot correctly.
So instead of having a puncture wound that your body cuts off, now you have a puncture wound that just won't stop bleeding.
Yeah.
Sometimes bleeds too much.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you're clotting too much, and instead of clotting just on the surface where the blood's coming out, you'll clot in other places, and then blood won't be able to flow through, say, your lungs or your heart.
Yeah. I just didn't realize that was such a big thing post-envenomation, was this coagulopathy that happens delayed.
I think it's actually pretty big, maybe because the tox rounds that I've gone to have been a lot of snake bites. I've been to a few.
Really?
And they often talk about the, you know, bleeding.
Yeah.
That's sadly common. But don't go playing around snakes, guys, unless you are well-trained.
And even then, make sure you have some anti-venom close by.
Next on the bites category that I saw was up to 1% of bites are from skunks, horses, squirrels, rats, rabbits, pigs, and monkeys.
All together.
Yeah. And then in India, 2 to 21% of the bites are from monkeys, which is the second most common after dogs.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, I mean, in India, I know that they don't keep house cats. So that's not a common animal for them to have, just culturally. So, yeah, apparently monkeys are number two.
Interesting. Did you happen to come across bats anywhere in your...
Not in terms of... In the U.S., it's not one of the highest hitters. It definitely is a thing, but it's much less common. Mm. And then the only other thing with bites is that obviously rabies is a big concern. And, of course, this is in animals that are acting weird. So you hear stories about, you know, raccoons, bats, dogs, rats. There's a lot of animals that can carry rabies. And they have to keep the animals in quarantine for a certain amount of time. And you need to prove that the animal has rabies in order to sometimes get the immunoglobulins, which is the treatment for rabies. It's very complicated to sometimes get the treatment because it's very expensive. And if you can't get the animal, sometimes it's, again, thank you, the U.S. medical system, but sometimes it's very hard through insurance to be able to get and then pay for the anti-IgG immunoglobulins. There's some fun, there's some NPR stories about it.
Really?
Yeah. There's one that I listened to, I think it was like a repeat that I heard before and then reheard, about this woman that was attacked by a raccoon. And not being able to catch the raccoon, so she had a lot of trouble getting the treatment for it.
What?
Yeah, it's so messed up. And it was something like, it was over holidays, so it was delayed getting through to get the medication in the right amount of time. It was messed up.
Oh my gosh. It was really messed up. If somebody can't catch the animal, they should err on the side of giving out the vaccine. A hospitalization for...
Well, the thing is, it's not just the vaccine. They want to give the immunoglobulin. And the immunoglobulin is apparently really, really, really expensive. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to say like $30,000 for the infusion. Like, really expensive. Mm. So, it's stupid. It's stupid. The U.S. medical care system is stupid. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Deaths?
Deaths? So I looked at this one study and they said, they were talking about all of the different animal-related injuries presenting to the ED over the course of a four-year period. And they said that death was infrequent and occurred in 1,162 patients.
Okay. Yeah, what I saw was from 2008 to 2015, the average about 1,610.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. And what I saw with that actually was, and again, the different study, 57% were from non-venomous animals, which is interesting because it seems like the venomous animals were more likely to cause death because there aren't that many snake bites. And they're although, to be fair, it also said the majority of these are farm animals. Anaphylaxis from bees, hornets, and wasps, and dogs. So, when people think of animal attacks, we'll kind of get into this when we talk about the most common animals to kill you.
Yeah.
But people think about, like, the dog or the bear or the lion coming in to kill you. They don't think about the fact that that bee that gives you an allergic reaction and you die from this allergic reaction is an animal, and that counts in this category, so.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that until this study said, 24% of all the deaths that they saw were from non-venomous arthropods.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll get into that. I have a great list. I don't know if you have a list.
I don't have a list.
I have a fun list that it won't take me long to go through.
Yeah.
But the number one killer is, if you think about it, you're not too surprised, but we'll get there.
This study also mentioned that rat bites they found proved to be the most lethal and caused 6.5 deaths per 10,000, which actually I took this zoonotic disease course when I was in my MPH program. And we talked a bit about this thing called rat bite fever, which it's this infectious disease. It's caused by two different bacteria. And it happens in people who work a lot with rats, like researchers and things like that. So if they get bitten, they can develop this like overwhelming infection. But apparently, you know, rats, they're more likely to cause this infection with their bite. And so pretty dangerous, which is something you wouldn't necessarily think of.
It is scary.
Yeah.
I think of rats and I think of like the fleas on rats that cause, you know, the Black Plague or something.
Yeah. But the bite itself can actually cause bad things.
Mouths are disgusting, guys. Just, they're disgusting. Another thing that I saw was the farm industry was surprisingly fatal, which makes sense because you're dealing with pretty large animals.
Yeah.
And the first thing I thought of when I read that was, so I grew up around horses. My grandmother grew up around horses, and she was able to expose me to them, which was great. And I remember this one time when I was young enough to have that memory where it's like you have flashes and bits and pieces of it that you remember, but it's not really a fully fleshed out memory. She went to catch one of the horses when it was icy out, and like either the horse ran away or she slipped or something, and she cut her head open and had this really big gash in her head. And she was probably in her 60s at the time. And we went to the ED, and she got like 5 or 6 staples in her head. And my grandma was one of those people, that strong woman who's just never going to complain and just be like, oh, well, I got to go back out there and catch it and feed it and clean it now.
Yeah.
Like, it's not bleeding anymore. Let's go back. And it's just thinking about that, it's like, it's a hard fall to crack your head open.
Yeah.
Have like a good cut on her head. And that was just with like an animal running away, let alone them. I got kicked by a horse once.
You did?
Yeah. I was working at a farm. There was horses on this farm that we, you know, would put the little kids on to ride, and the younger ones would be led around. The older ones would, you would walk them around. And when we were in this barn, there weren't enough hooks to hold a horse, to connect the horses to. And we had walkie talkies that we normally communicated from the upper corral to the lower corral. And you get really comfortable around horses when you're there enough. And I was too comfortable. And I bent down I dropped my walkie talkie and I bent down to pick it up behind this horse.
Oh no!
And then it kicked out and it caught me like on the chest. And apparently everybody was like, it looked like it was slow motion, like the Matrix. You just like barrel rolled a couple times and then hit the ground. And I don't distinctly remember the flying,
yeah,
but I remember the landing.
Oh.
And they brought me to like the camp nurse or whatever. And they brought me to the hospital to get, you know, chest x-ray just in case, because I got hit in the chest pretty hard. And apparently they called my mom. And what they told her was, Jordan got kicked by a horse. We're taking her to the hospital.
Yeah.
Not she's fine. Not she's talking. Not she's good. But we get to the hospital and I get out of the pickup truck that brought me there. My mom's like in tears, understandably, because they never said she's fine.
Right.
And like, I was fine. I went back the next day and the people that I worked with were like, why are you back? I'm like, I'm totally fine. But yeah. I got, like, it was a good kick, and it was lucky that I was close enough.
Right.
You know, like, if you're further away and they're able to build up more speed, it's going to be worse. But I was pretty close, so it kind of was more of a aggressive push than a slam. But I had a nice couple bruises for a couple of days.
Oh, my gosh. In the shape of a horseshoe?
It was not in the shape of a horseshoe.
Dang it.
I know.
That would have been a good picture for your future atlas of wounds.
I have so many wounds and injuries at this point. I don't need more to that collection.
Yeah. And I need more to that collection.
You need more to my collection?
Yeah. How am I supposed to learn?
Well, Dr. Moffitt, one of the medical examiners in San Francisco, did tell me after I think I got in a black eye in rugby, and she's like, you should take a picture of it every day so you can like figure out like wound healing and knowing how much your bruises fade over time. And it's like, that's probably a good idea, actually.
Yeah.
So maybe I should start doing a daily log of some of my worst bruises. So one thing that I found, and I don't remember what made me think of it, was, but when you think about an animal attack, you think about the animal physically like attacking the person. But one of the major causes of death around developed areas is deaths caused by vehicle collisions with animals. From 2008 to 2017, so in that decade, in Texas, there were 197 deaths. So average about 20 a year.
Oh.
In Wisconsin, in that decade, there were 121 deaths. And then Michigan and Pennsylvania were 105 and 104. So in Texas, it averages about 20 deaths a year caused by animals colliding with cars.
Oh.
And in Wisconsin, it's about 12. And Michigan and Pennsylvania, it's around 10. And those were the only ones that were over 10 per year.
Wow.
But, I mean, Texas is a big state, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
But California really wasn't that high on that list at all. California was...
Which is interesting.
Yeah, California was 55.
Californians drive everywhere. So average of 5.
Californians drive everywhere.
There's agricultural areas.
But a lot of it is agriculture. First, Texas is more like cattle.
Mm.
You know, that's my guess. But it's interesting because you think of, you know, your car being totaled, which for sure an animal can completely total your car, but you can either die from, you know, hitting the animal, being ejected from that, from avoiding the animal and hitting another vehicle, from avoiding the animal and hitting a fixed object, from fire associated with this. So there's a lot of things that I didn't think about, that it's an animal-associated death, but not in the normal attacking sense.
Right.
So.
Animals.
Yeah.
Taking back the world one motor vehicle accident at a time.
And then kind of related to this, there was a study in Sweden that looked at animal deaths. And one of the interesting facts I saw from it was deaths related to non-venomous animals were about 0.67 per million people. But deaths related to riding horses or horse-drawn vehicles was about 2.2 deaths per year.
Yeah, so like I saw
more
that.
Than twice as much from horse-associated than from non-venomous animal.
Yeah.
Just seemed like a lot.
Yeah.
So going through the top 15 animals that around the world cause death, what do you think is number one?
Well, we talked about how it was non-venomous arthropods that caused... So I'm going to go with, like, bees? Okay.
So, surprisingly, actually, bees weren't on here, which I was shocked by.
Oh.
But mosquitoes, which makes sense, right? Because malaria, dengue... It's about 750,000 people a year die from mosquitoes diseases.
We need to get those guys gone.
They're working on it. I mean, they're doing that genetic engineering where they essentially make them infertile.
Oh,
so then they breed. They think they're breeding. And then no babies happen. So they are working on it. But it's 750,000 people a year around the world die from mosquito-borne illness.
Yeah, that's insane.
Next is humans.
Yeah.
About 437,000 a year of homicide.
Okay, yeah.
Then snakes, with about 100,000 a year. Shortage of anti-venom is a big issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then dogs, so 35,000 people a year around the world die of dogs, primarily from rabies. Then freshwater snails from schistosomiasis.
Freshwater snails made the cut. I love it.
Because schistosomiasis, it's a disease, it's a tiny little parasite that causes GI distress and then can cause a lot of bleeding and you can't eat enough and diarrhea and a lot of bad things.
Wear your shoes when you go in the snail-fested river.
So creepy. They literally like burrow into your ankle skins. Okay. The next was assassin or kissing bugs. Chagas disease.
Ah, yes.
Then tsetse flies.
About 10,000 a year.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Then Ascaris, which is another parasite. It's a little bit bigger. Again, can cause lung issues or bowel issues.
Now and also you get walking around barefoot in like the swamps or something.
Just wear your shoes.
Yeah.
Wear your shoes. Then we get into some of the things you would think about. So crocodiles were next.
Really?
About 1,000 people a year die from crocodiles.
Oh.
Then we go back to our friends, the wormy worms, tapeworms, and cysticercosis, about 700 people a year.
Hmm.
Then hippos at about 500 a year.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the animals that people think is so docile, but full-grown hippos will mess you up.
Really? Yeah. Seriously?
They can run really fast on land. I forget how fast it is, but they run surprisingly fast.
And they
fast.
Swim really fast, too. Yeah. Next, actually, tied with hippos is elephants.
Hmm.
Although more people kill elephants than elephants kill people.
People are the worst.
People are the worst. Number two, actually.
Mosquitoes are the worst. People are the second worst. Fine.
And then lions, about 22 a year.
Really?
Then wolves at about 10 a year. And then sharks at about 6 a year.
And sharks get the bad rap.
There are 15. They made the cut on this one list that I'm sure that somebody will have something that they think should be on this list that is not.
Yeah.
But not including bacteria and viruses and stuff, obviously. But yeah, it's kind of crazy.
That's so funny. There's a movie called Jaws, and yet there are 14 other animals above sharks. Yep.
There should be a movie called Mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes. What's the
succubus?
No, that's a mythological creature.
Yeah, I know, but like that's what I think of with the thingy.
It's not a proboscis. That's the thing for butterflies, isn't it?
Yeah, mosquito mouth parts. Mouth parts. They're just called mouth parts. That's not exciting.
Wow. Can you imagine a horror movie that comes out called Mouth Parts?
That would be pretty awful.
It's straight to DVD, mouth parts.
Oh, there's a picture in here of a mosquito eating a snake. Feeding on a snake. Look at that cute little snake.
Oh, he's so adorable.
So yeah, it's very interesting that the things you're really comfortable with, like your dogs, are the fourth most likely animal to kill you around the world.
Yeah.
Still hate mosquitoes. We all hate mosquitoes.
They serve no ecological purpose.
And then going into what our job is. How can you tell if this injury was caused by a bear attacking the campsite or the co-camper who is trying to cover up this murder by pretending that he's a bear?
Yeah, overall animal attacks, from what I was reading, are pretty rare in forensic work.
Yes.
But as you just said, they are known to pose problems given the potential to mimic homicide, especially because a lot of these incidents are unwitnessed. And
yes.
So you just come across a body that has all these various injuries and you're trying to piece together what might have happened. So there aren't that many studies regarding animal attacks because they are so rare, but
yes.
We both came across this literature review of fatal attacks by large mammals by Gudmundsson et al.
I'm also going to say that when I Googled, or not Googled, when I did a PubMed search for animal attacks, there were some amazing things like escaped circus elephant, like Gore's victim, and like they were just some amazing titles. So if you want to have a fun Friday night, go on PubMed. You don't necessarily need access to the articles, because even just getting access to the titles is fantastic. And just look up animal attacks or animal murders, and it's just, there was one like fatal donkey attack. I was like, what?
Yeah, my favorite one that I came across was Rambut, the killer sheep.
Yes.
I couldn't actually read it, but
my next
it was from animal 1987.
Name will be Rambut.
Yeah, Rambut, the killer sheep.
Yeah, I actually was thinking about doing the escape circus elephant one, but I couldn't get access to the article.
Oh.
And so I was like, all right, well, I'll find something else.
I can't believe as residents we don't have access to
and
fun
articles.
And
I was logged into UCSF too.
Yeah.
They just didn't have access.
We should petition for access to these fun
forensics
articles.
Is important, guys.
Yeah.
Get more. So this article looked at kind of the large animals in the Nordic wilderness, and they focused on, they talked about specifically some of the certain cases, and they kind of generalized to the different animals.
Yeah. So the first animal they talked about was the brown bear, and they found that the rate of death by brown bear was about one death per year in the U.S., and only three cases of fatal bear attacks had been reported in Sweden since 1902.
Yeah.
And conditions that they found that were shown to increase the risk of a bear attack were if the person came across the bear suddenly and unexpectedly, if it was a food-conditioned bear and there was close proximity to the bear's den, as well as the presence of cubs, if the bear was wounded, or if there were dogs present. So
yes, that I saw. It was definitely dogs, like, freak them out.
Yeah. And then they found that bears tended to attack the central body regions, mm-hmm. including the head, by means of biting, hitting, and clawing. Because apparently the way that a brown bear attacks is that it holds its victim down with one of the forelimbs and then uses the other one to eviscerate the victim.
It kind of sounds like what my cat tries to do.
So your cat's actually a bear?
Yes. Her name is Black Bear.
I like how she paused to look at you when you said that.
What? What you want, Mom?
And then the most common mechanism of death in brown bear attacks was, unsurprisingly, maybe exsanguination.
Yeah,
so
most of these,
blood loss.
I found that all, like, most of these were really exsanguination.
Yeah.
I'm going to quickly talk about the wild boar. The wild boar is obviously smaller than a bear, so their easy access is lower parts of the body. So they tend to have more of this penetrating injury from the tusks on the lower body. In one case, they saw a head attack, and it's kind of after the person fell, they kept attacking, and they had severe brain injury and probably died from that brain injury from that. So yeah, wild boar, more likely lower, and if you've fallen, you might have something higher up, but it's really going to be lower extremity penetrating injury.
So wolves, they mentioned that wolves don't normally attack humans, and that the attack is usually caused by three underlying reasons, one of which the wolf was rabid.
Yep.
The second of which the wolf regarded the human as prey. I don't know how they
hungry.
They interviewed the wolf.
Hungry.
And then if the animal feels provoked.
Which I feel is a kind of theme throughout all of this.
Right. Don't provoke animals. And then they found that injuries consisted mostly of biting to the dorsal extremities and shoulders, as well as mastication of the face and extremities.
Yeah, that one I was a little creepy.
Yeah.
But I guess if you've gone to all the work, you might as well have a little snack.
Yeah, and the face, it's easy access, it's very true. Squishy. Especially if, like, they were looking at Nordic countries. So
chubby cheeks.
Well, I was thinking more like the person's bundled up in all their cold weather gear, and the only thing that they can get to is the face.
That's fair. Moose. These are more crush injuries. Obviously, moose have less sharp parts, and so you'll get anything that involves crushing of the body. And you can take that as, you know, the chest, the head, limbs. You'll have kind of these broader injuries rather than the more specific things. And these are similar to what you would also see in water buffalo or cattle attacks.
And I thought it was interesting, for moose, they only found one case report of a death being caused by a moose. Yeah.
So overall, there are patterns associated with different animals, and individual injuries could be this homicide or accident, but it's kind of this constellation of findings can be associated with different animals.
Yep. And they actually had a really fun diagram in their paper showcasing the different injury patterns of the different animals that they looked at, which maybe I will post to social media. One other thing that came up over the course of this research was the specialty of veterinary forensics, which is a very young specialty, it sounds like, from what I was reading. And in comparison to forensic pathology, forensic veterinarians often deal with cases of live animals. So mostly what they're looking for is to assess abuse and neglect cases in animals, but they can also be consulted on in cases where animals cause a death. But apparently there's only one program in the entirety of the United States for veterinary forensic science, and it's at the University of Florida.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I found this other article that was talking about it as a specialty in the UK, and it's similarly under certified there too. Like, there aren't a lot of training programs for it, and it's a thing that people within the field are starting to push more for. So I just thought that was a little interesting side note.
Yeah, no, it's definitely.
So the story I wanted to tell this for this episode comes from San Francisco. So it comes from the San Francisco Zoo. Shortly after closing time on December 25th, 2007, Tatiana, a female Siberian tiger, escaped from her open-air enclosure. She proceeded to kill 17-year-old Carlos Eduardo Souza Jr. and injured brothers Amrit Paul, or Paul Dhaliwal, who was 19, and Kulbir Dhaliwal, who was 23. The brothers had fled to the zoo cafe, which is about 300 yards away from the tiger enclosure, and that's where an employee heard their screams and called 911. So when armed officials got there, they found Tatiana the tiger with Kulbir Dhaliwal, one of the brothers. And at first they held their fire because they were afraid of hitting him. Eventually they created a distraction, which caused Tatiana to turn her head. And they were able to shoot her right through the forehead. Overall, the Dhaliwal brothers received deep bites and claw wounds on their heads, neck, arms, and hands. And Souza was eventually found near the tiger grotto, and he had blunt force injuries to his head and neck, many punctures and scratches to his head, neck, and chest, as well as skull and spinal fractures and a cut to his jugular vein, which is a large vessel in your neck.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Different. Very this different.
Is extremely different. I might actually like the other one more.
So we just poured the stout cast one, and it's a little earthier?
Yeah.
More like peaty.
I would
peatier. That's what it is.
Interested in trying this with full olfactory function.
You want to breathe? No.
You know, I enjoy breathing about as much as the next person.
Also, Cole is rapt with attention while we talk about these larger cousins.
Oh, yeah? Are you interested in learning how the tiger attack happened?
Wow.
getting ideas for later. Glad I don't live here. Yes. Have
fun. You'll be living with her in 2 years.
Bye. Oh, that's true. So it wasn't immediately clear how Tatiana had gotten out of the tiger enclosure.
Okay.
But eventually investigation revealed that while the moat at the tiger grotto was met national standards, the moat wall was only 12.5 feet tall, which was significantly lower than the 16.5 feet recommended for such enclosures.
So they can jump further than you think.
Yeah. And when they did a necropsy on Tatiana, and when they examined her rear...
necropsy is an autopsy on an animal.
Yeah. And when they examined her rear paws, they found that they were embedded with concrete chips, suggesting that she had pushed against the moat wall during her escape.
Okay.
So in the days following the attack, the director of the zoo stated that Tatiana had probably been provoked. And another visitor at the zoo, Jennifer Miller, who was there with her family, said that she allegedly saw the group of men, including an unidentified fourth person, taunting the lions less than an hour before.
Why would you do that?
The tiger attack.
Why does that seem like a good idea?
Well, part of it in this case might have been that toxicology reports found that the Dhaliwal brothers had alcohol in their systems. It looked like Paul had a blood alcohol level of 0.16,
Oof.
Which was twice the legal limit for operating a motor vehicle.
So 0.08 is the countrywide limit.
Yep. And they found legal limits in Cool Beer, the other brother, and Carlos, the 17-year-old who passed away.
Okay.
And there was also evidence of cannabis use amongst all three.
Okay.
So being under the influence might have had something to do with it. Also adolescent, teenage.
Yeah. I feel like of all the places that I would go and do a drinking game, it probably wouldn't be the zoo.
No. You don't think so?
Probably not.
Like, take a shot every time the
animal takes a poop in front of you. Yeah.
So turt by the end of the... Did I use that correctly?
Yes.
Turt?
Yep. You're super woke.
That's... Wow. If I didn't have to leave before, I have to leave now. Other sources said that pine cones and sticks might have been thrown at Tatiana. They were found in areas within the grove that it didn't look like they could have landed naturally.
Why?
And one of the brothers, Paul, later said that the three had been yelling and waving at the tiger, but an attorney representing the brothers later stated that they had not been taunting the tiger.
Obviously.
So eventually the brothers sued the zoo. And in the end, they were compensated $900,000 for their injuries and emotional harm, and also for defamation.
And what was the tiger given back?
Well, the tiger, she Tatiana has a statue in San Francisco.
Oh, good.
Yeah, on December 25th, 2008, about a year after the attacks,
on Christmas, a
life-size concrete and tile sculpture of Tatiana. Good. By John Engdahl was unveiled near Coit Tower.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which is now on my list of SF sites to see.
Let's do it.
So yeah, they got $900,000 for their injuries and defamation because the zoo was making these claims that they had provoked the tiger.
Okay.
And then the family of Carlos Souza, the boy who died, they also got a settlement from the zoo, although it was never disclosed what amount it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Probably better.
And actually, I had heard of this attack because Dr. Moffat, who you mentioned earlier,
gave the presentation on this a couple times.
Yeah. But Tatiana had actually attacked a human before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. About a year before the attacks happened, December 22nd, 2006, Tatiana bit a zoo worker's arm through the enclosure's grill. And the California Occupational Safety and Health Administration had determined that the cage was inadequate, so her enclosure had actually been renovated after this bite happened, and then it was renovated again after this fatal attack. Yeah, so very sad story.
My story is a little bit different, kind of going into our forensic science for the win. So we're gonna go a little further from our home city. We're gonna go all the way to Loftahammer, Sweden. back in September 2008.
Loft a hammer?
It's like loft a hammer. That's all one word.
Oh my gosh.
And so the article that I found this story from is there's a paper on this study, but it was all de-identified, and I had to like Google to find like their actual names and more info.
Oh.
Because it kept saying like the suspect, and I had to like look into seeing who actually this was, and I found it. But it's Loft a Hammer, Sweden. It was a 63-year-old woman, Agneta Westlund, who went out to walk her dog in September of 2008. Agneta didn't come back. And so her husband, Ingemar Westlund, who was 68, went out to look for her. He unfortunately found her dead in a nearby forest by the shore of a lake, and he was arrested immediately.
It's always the husband.
So when they found the body, it was supine at the bottom of a sloping path leading to a lake, about 1 to 2 meters from a rowboat. The surrounding ground was all trampled and flattened grass that was partly covered by fresh soil. And they thought that this was, you know, from the rescue workers and the police officers that all went in and tried to save her and recover the body and everything. Also, there was a recent fresh rain. Like, it rained really, really hard between the time that she went out for this walk, apparently, and they were able to recover her.
Oh.
So between all of this, they were like, well, this is definitely from the workers and everything. There was also a wooden log that was in fragments nearby that they thought was used as a boat rest. The decedent's shirt and jacket were positioned so the abdomen was exposed, so it was, like, brought up. And then the jeans had this huge gaping hole on the anterior, the front right side from the hip to the ankle. And on the back, it was torn on that same side from the waistband all the way through the knee.
She was just hip to the recent fashion trends.
Yes, yes. But instead of going, like, horizontally, they went vertically all the way down.
Yeah.
Giant rip. Also associated with this were fringed edges that were partially tucked into deep lacerations, so deep cuts in that leg.
Oh.
So the fashion tool went a little deep and went super deep into, like, her muscle, and the jean edges were tucked into those lacs.
Well, they say fashion kills.
It would kill me in 2 seconds. I'm not... Oh. So then there were extensive and deep wounds in the right leg and thigh that was exposing musculature. And they initially interpreted this as sharp force, so cutting. The amount of blood at the scene was very minimal, so they thought that it was probably a dumping site and not where the death happened.
Oh, they didn't think the rain had washed it away?
No, they thought that it was probably a dumping site.
Huh.
And there were a few loose strands of hair around the left eye and neck that they collected. So preliminarily, coming into this, they thought that the husband did it. Hi, Cole. And that she was killed by a vehicle or some other machinery. And the husband had this riding lawnmower that they thought was what caused the injuries. So at autopsy, first thing on CT, they saw bilateral pneumothoraxes, which are air in the lung cavity, not in the lungs, but around the lungs, which is not where it should be. It should be in the lungs. There was a thin right-sided subdural hemorrhage, so bleeding in the brain. There were multiple rib fractures of all the right-sided transverse processes of the lumbar spine.
Oof.
So down part of her back, her spine was broken, as well as fractures of the right tib fib, so that's the right lower leg. On external exam, they saw superficial abrasions and contusions on the head and face, so cuts and bruises. There was petechia, so tiny little bleeding into the conjunctiva in the oral mucosa. There was a tongue laceration, so she either bit her tongue or it was cut. There were widespread contusions and superficial abrasions on the entire body. So all over the place she had cuts and tissue injury. On the right upper arm, there was about a 1 centimeter round and more than 1 centimeter deep wound, as well as a 5 centimeter long cut on the right arm, that is. And then on the giant leg injury that I was talking about,
yeah,
it was on the outer right thigh and leg. There were a few deep lacerations up to 30 centimeters long.
Oh.
With deep and uneven skin flaps and fringed edges with embedded grass. So a lot of injury. And then surrounding avulsion. And then finally, there was this horizontal band-shaped contusion on her central back.
Okay.
That was about like a foot wide. they were very confused about. And then on internal exam, they confirmed the bilateral flail chest, which caused the pneumothoraces, and that's where your ribs are injured in a way that air can get into around your lungs, but air can't get out, so your lungs keep getting compressed, and you can't get any oxygen, which if you don't get oxygen, you die. Extensive contusions on her gluteal muscles, which is your butt muscles. Soft tissue hemorrhage in the diaphragm, as well as small contusions, and essentially all of the abdominal organs were bruised. And then some long-term lesions, including a little Hürthle cell adenoma, which is a little thyroid nodule that they decided to note in this report, which is interesting.
And they just found incidentally.
Yeah. So the cause of death, they determined, was a flail chest. So pretty much her lungs weren't able to fill with air because there's so much air on the outside pushing in that they couldn't inflate. So the forensics investigation, they looked at the bloodstain pattern on the boat, and it showed that the victim had been hit multiple times near the boat. So that kind of excluded the, it happened somewhere else and it was a dumping site.
Huh.
Then they did hair analysis. I said there were a few hairs around the eye and the neck.
Yeah.
And they were identified as cervid, which is the deer family. And they took this as they thought that whoever moved the body, because they still thought the body was moved,
right,
had been transported in the same vehicle that a moose carcass had been transported in, because they have an annual moose hunt in Loftahammer, Sweden.
Oh, of course they do.
And so it's like, well, they must have just transported the body in the same thing.
I thought you were going to say they thought somebody had transported the body on the back of a moose. And I was like, that is so what I imagine when I think of Nordic country.
Now I'm just picturing Frozen.
Sven, carry the body.
Oh, man. And that riding tractor was analyzed and excluded. And the husband, Ingemar, was held in custody for 10 days before he was finally let go.
Poor dude.
They also thought about the grass-containing injuries on the lower extremity. And I mentioned before that wild boars have lower extremity injuries. So they thought that maybe it's a wild boar attack.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they thought it was unlikely because, as I said, usually when you're down, the wild boar will stop attacking. So they thought it was a little weird. Like, they wouldn't have those torso injuries that they had.
Yeah.
And then further DNA analysis on that hair identified European elk or a moose, which is the largest member of the cervid family. So these are usually shy and peaceful creatures, but there's this theory that I saw in a couple articles on the internet, who knows how true this is, that they thought that the moose might have gotten hold of fermented apples and caused this. And it also was right at the beginning of, right before rutting season, which is when more aggressive behavior happens.
So he was drunk and horny.
Yes.
But I'm bumped. Get it?
I do get it.
Yeah. Just making
but
sure.
I like that you explained it more.
Thanks. It's always funnier when you explain.
100%. So the conclusion from this was that they think that the woman was walking her dog unleashed, and the dog came across this moose, and then the dog ran back to the human for protection.
Oh.
But the moose then, you know, possibly going for the dog, got her, and then probably killed her between stomping, kicking, and goring. And they brought this to the specialists at the Swedish University of Agricultural Sciences, and they said that, well, if this is the case, which it seems like it would be, to confirm it, a moose, they would find saliva on the victim's clothes. So they did analysis on some stains on the clothes, and they found a ton of moose DNA. So this all happened in September 2008, and then finally in January 2009, they dropped the case against the husband.
Whoa.
So that band-like contusion on the back was actually, they think that she might have landed on the trunk, and then the stomping on her caused all these, like, pretty much hemorrhages into the skin where that trunk was.
The
stump, pretty much.
Oh.
The right arm wounds could be consistent with a hoof.
Yeah.
And the fact that there was no blood could be that she probably had this flail chest pretty early on and couldn't breathe and died. And so there isn't a lot of bleeding because she might have died pretty soon in this.
I see.
They also said that the pants tear could be consistent with her being lifted off the ground by her pants. And they surmised that that could be the antlers got caught and then, like, lifted her up and she dropped. So this is kind of that perfect case of, is it a homicide or is it an animal attack? Which I thought was really cool, because in this case, you could take this constellation of injuries and with the investigation going a certain way, you can definitely be like, well, maybe the husband did it. But in this case, the moose did it, which they never caught this moose.
So the moose is still at
large?
The
moose is still at large.
Oh my gosh. Do they have wanted posters of this moose all over Lofthammer?
They should just get him in with all the fermented apples.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was really interesting because you take all of these injuries individually and you can come up with a story.
Yeah.
But if you kind of take a step back and then you take that forensic evidence, you take the hair, you look at those. Of course, like, it's interesting that they took that hair and they're like, well, they were just near a moose.
Right.
And then, of course, they took the moose saliva and stuff. And it's like, okay, this makes more sense together. But yeah, that was really interesting, using forensic science plus forensic pathology and tying it together to, okay, this actually makes way more sense.
Right, yeah. It's so funny to imagine the person who was doing that, and they had this, like, clear idea that it was a human attacking a human, and then they're like,
maybe not. Slightly bigger than a human.
Yeah.
Because, like, flail chest, you need a lot of force, because this is usually, you know, you get flail chest from traffic accidents, from being hit with a baseball bat. You need a lot of force to break enough ribs together, and also to cause a soft tissue damage that air can get in. So, and being in the middle of the woods, she couldn't have, she needed help soon. So she wasn't going to survive that.
Yeah.
But don't go into the forest.
Right. As MFM says, stay out of the forest.
Not only for human killers, which is the second highest rate of people killing you, but also for moose killers.
Right.
Because you never know.
Yeah. And then wear bug spray.
And yes. Bug spray, moose repellent, and pepper spray to protect yourself from the human killer. Yeah,
just have a belt of sprays.
Which situation do I need this
in? Yeah.
Oh, man. But yeah. Protect yourself, people.
Yeah.
So, Schmeeds.
So, Schmeeds. So, if you like this and any of our other episodes, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. It's how we get boosted up on the various podcast platforms and other people hear about us.
You can visit our website at deadmendotellpodcast.com, where we link to all of our sources and our episode guide.
You can follow us on Twitter at deadmendo,
on Insta at the Dead Tell Tales,
and we have a Facebook page, Dead Men Do Tell Tales Podcast.
And as always, you can send us an email through our website or directly to thedeadtelltales@gmail.com.
And our opening music is Introducing the Pre-Roll by Lee Rosebeer, who you can find on SoundCloud.
So thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed our animal attack right before we eat all the animals on Turkey Day.
Yep. So happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye.
Bye, guys.